I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Hey, today's guests are Kathy Murphy and Andrea Parrott. Two people today. They are co-hosts of a podcast called Just Go Bike, and they're also some form of leadership in the Ragbri racing, not racing, it's nope. Riding. It's moving a bike across Iowa.
Yes.
Peter, you did this summer. Yes. I commend you on biking across Iowa. I will maybe ask you later why on earth you would do that, but you're still alive.
I'm still alive. Heck. And you know, it's awesome. You literally ride from the west coast of Iowa to the east coast. You dip your back tire in the Missouri River, spend 7 days, and you dip your front tire into the Mississippi River.
Really?
And it's been going on for a very long time.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know.
And it's fun. It's not a race. It's a ride.
It's a ride. That's a difference, yeah. Right?
Yep.
Well, we'll dig into that with our guests in a little bit. But first, I bet you got some nature in the news.
That I do, Leif. Way back in 2013, Swedish researchers discovered that dung beetles use the Milky Way at night to navigate as they roll balls of dung in a straight line away from competitors.
There's so much there to unpack.
Right. Okay. And so here's the thing with that and why they actually use the Milky Way, because it's actually the bright
white. It's a stripe. Okay. I get
it's
that.
It's a straight line.
Sure.
And think about how dung beetles roll poop.
I'm thinking.
They've got their head down on the ground.
Head down.
Yep.
Tail up, feet pushing backwards.
And their head's shaking. So as their head's moving back and forth, as they're rolling this ball of dung, stars get blurry. What's better than stars?
A Milky Way. A whole stripe of it.
Yeah.
And the Swedes were out one night.
And they noticed that.
Okay.
But here, it gets better because the Australian engineers have gotten into this game.
Oh, no.
And they are now using the same technique as the dung beetles do with AI and using to guide drones and such through the sky. Because when you think about drones, they're small and there is quite a bit of movement. And if you can use your AI sensors to actually track the Milky Way, they fly drones in a straight line.
At night.
At night.
Because GPS wouldn't really work. Same thing. Okay.
Yeah. And then there's also the issues with satellites too. So if you can use the Milky Way to help navigate satellites, you can stabilize them so they don't necessarily wobble as much.
So I had a thought that, like, when you mentioned the Swedes noticed that the beetles were using the Milky Way, and then you switched to the Australians were going to use the Milky Way, I was thinking, it's Southern Hemisphere, and that's going to change the direction. But no, I guess it would still work, right?
It would still work, yeah.
Okay.
It's all about guiding drones and satellites through AI.
And did the Australians know about the Swedish beetles?
Yes.
And so the beetles effectively are instructing humans on how to perfect their drone flight. That's pretty cool. Okay.
Yeah. And so are dung beetles. They're pretty cool too.
Are the dung beetles aware of what they've done for the Australians?
I don't know. I don't know. But they are aware of the Milky Way.
Clearly.
Yes.
Well, this is a hard segue to our trivia question for today, which has to do with Ragbri, this ride across Iowa.
You know, Leif, I always rode my bike in the daylight, so I didn't have to worry about the Milky Way to ride to guide me through Iowa.
Would it get you across Iowa in the right direction?
Oh, sure.
Of course it would.
Yeah. You know, there's no mountains there, so I can tell where the sun rises
just too
and
easy.
Sets.
Our trivia question is, what was the first year of Ragbri? It wasn't this year. That's your clue. Okay.
It was after I was born, though.
It was a little after you were born.
Yeah.
So it could be a while ago. We've got Kathy Murphy and Andrea Parrott. They're going to join us. Tell us more about Ragbri and why you want to bike across Iowa. After the break, stay tuned.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Hey, welcome back from the break. I want to welcome today's guests. We have two, Kathy Murphy and Andrea Parrott. They are co-hosts of a podcast called Just Go Bike, and they are also leaders of the Ragbri Bike Ride Across Iowa. Welcome to the Nature of Idaho.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Iowa and Idaho, we do recognize folks at home. Those are different states. But you might find that you want to bike across Iowa, right?
Right. Right. Because, you know, if you bike across Idaho, you go up to the panhandle, it's 60 miles. What fun is that?
You're done pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, Kathy and Andrea, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we're going to dig into this ride across Iowa.
All right. Well, I'm Andrea. Most people call me AP, though, so you're welcome to do that. Any of our listeners that might be on this would definitely not know who Andrea is. But I've been involved with Ragbri. This is my 12th as an employee. However, I've ridden 15 as a civilian. I started when I was a little kid. And in fact, I started even further beyond that because my parents met on Ragbri in the 70s. And while they were biking along, and the rest is history.
Very cool.
I should also say that for Ragbri, my job is social media manager. So if you see anything online, it probably was my doing, except for any of the mistakes. Someone else did that.
Right.
And I am Kathy Murphy, but most people know me as Murph. So same thing with AP. People might go, who the heck is Kathy? But yes, I am Murph. And I am one of the few people that get to be part of the Ragbri crew. And I get to ride my bike during Ragbri. So I'm like a boots on the ground type person. I get to ride across the state and take photographs that help out Andrea for social media. And I believe this will be coming up my 29th time riding my bike across Iowa. So I can definitely answer your question of why would somebody ride their bikes across Iowa?
Why on earth would you do it?
Iowa is so beautiful. I mean, there's way more to Iowa than just driving your car on Interstate 80, going from one side of the state to the other. And I mean, Andrea or AP can tell us, like, the way the terrain in Iowa is, it's different in every little section of the state.
That's very true. I think for me, I like to ride Ragbri. First of all, when I started, I was 12. So there was an element of like wanting independence and like, you know, doing my own thing, even though I was with my family. But then it grew to be a family adventure. My mom rides, my dad, my aunts, my uncles, my brothers, my cousins. So it's a family thing for me. Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I was 12 or 13 when Ragbri went through my hometown. And I just remember, even then, thousands of bikes moving right through. They were all 10 speeds at that point, too. You know, bike technology has gone crazy. But, you know, sitting there as a kid and you see all these people going through, you're just going, wow, wouldn't that be cool to ride Ragbri? And, you know, 40 odd years later, I did it. So there you go.
Very cool. What, for me, at least, what does Ragbri mean or stand for?
What does it stand for? That is a number one question I get asked besides, where's my tent? Or how many miles should I train? It is Register's Annual Great Bicycle Ride Across Iowa. And Register refers to the Des Moines Register, which is our state's newspaper. It was actually founded by two newspaper employees. A columnist and an editor.
I think when I, again, doing my research instead of training, I think they wanted to ride across Iowa, but still get paid to do it. And yes. So they just started off the first time they did it, they just did stories and submitted it off to the Register. And then many years later, it is just an amazing event.
And the interesting thing about the state of Iowa is that the routes each year are roughly around 500 miles. And the way Iowa is set up, there's typically a community, a town, a city, about every 12 to 15 miles. So it's just perfect for a multi-day bicycle ride. You know, you're never going to have to ride 50 miles at one shot. You put it into little teeny pieces, 10 miles a town, another 12 miles a town, another, and each town throws a huge party. It's basically an all-day festival for 7 days straight.
When you start planning the routes, because they change every year, what goes into that planning? And honestly, do you start looking at routes in August? You know, we're talking a week or so after the end of RegBri. Are you already working on routes? Because like you said, if there's a town every 10 to 15 miles, you've got to find that right town that not only is willing to host, but there's a lot of bikes that come through that town in one day, and they have to be able to accommodate. So how do you plan these routes?
Well, that's up to our director, Matt Phippen, and it is a big secret. I will say about this time of year, it's mid-September, he has a pretty good idea of what the route is going to be in 2025. We send out a mailing immediately after the ride and ask towns if they'd be interested in hosting. Sometimes they'll say no because they say have a construction project or another event, but by and large, they'll say yes. And then he kind of crafts it from there, working with the Department of Transportation and the state troopers to make sure that the roads are safe enough. Most of our two-lane highways are very safe, but there are things like agricultural plants or, I don't know, different farms with trucks that'll be driving by that we wouldn't want to be on the route. So he kind of puts all that together. Plus, we have a loose rule that overnight towns only host every 5 years or so. So just to kind of try to cover every different parts of the state. Mm-hmm. So all that stuff combined makes a route, or at least the start of a route. Mm-hmm. And then we'll announce the official route in January.
How many riders do you typically have?
It's approximately 20,000, give or take. And that would include day riders as well as week-long riders. And RegBri takes a whole week, I should say that.
Yeah. And typically, a typical day is anywhere from 50 to 80 to 100 miles. And so if you think about 20,000 people, everyone quickly gets spread out.
Okay.
So you've got every type of rider, every type of athlete. You've got the people that maybe you want to go as fast as possible. And then you have the people that really want to explore and take photos and see the sights of Iowa. So, you know, that's why Matt has to pick roads that can accommodate that many riders, but also not disrupt the local area too much.
Yeah. So I just had a thought of like, is this like Burning Man on wheels? In terms of like the logistics, I see a large troop of people kind of going and for their own motivations and own pace, but ultimately descending on a town and the festival quality of that. But then there's the logistical quality of that. And then the next day, pick up and move and descend on the next town. So it's, boy, that's got to be a lot of moving parts, like quite literally, but to be able to manage all of that. Sounds like a challenge.
Yeah, I would say it's not quite Burning Man quality, but I will say if you know, you're on like Ride with GPS or some sort of software that has a heat map, it would be so interesting to see, you know, all of the riders throughout the week, because that would be a pretty cool graphic to see.
Like migratory birds, perhaps.
Yeah.
I think we're more fun than Burning Man.
There you go.
You don't have to deal with all that dust.
Yeah, like, there you go. I like that.
Yeah.
So. I've never been to Burning Man, and I really don't want to, but I am going to. Jedi Mustard will be back there next year as well. So
that's your riding group.
That's the riding group. Yeah, okay. Team Jedi Mustard. Yeah.
And people do RegBri in about every way you can think of, whether they're riding solo, even though you're surrounded by 20,000 people, on teams like you did, Peter. Like Air Force has a cycling club that they all ride together and, you know, wear the same matching kits, they're called. And then people camp. They might have an RV. They may have a homestay if they know people in the area. Or very few people might get lucky enough to find hotels in the area.
Yeah. Right. For us, we had a driver and she was fantastic. I think she was the MVP for the whole week. And when we would see the big semis come in and they would set up the tents and just throw the bags down and all that, I'm like, oh, I'm so glad we have Rachel, our driver, with us. It just made life so much easier. And that's, I think, a major part of the experience is camping. And it's amazing the wide range of people that you meet in the campgrounds. And again, I was riding at the right speed, where slightly faster than some, slightly slower than most, and you still, everyone is so nice. And it's just not Iowans. You're getting people from all over the world coming in here, and you just start talking as you're pedaling. Now, we were in southern Iowa, so I didn't do a whole lot of talking going up the hills, but you know, that's the great part about it. I mean, it was like a giant moving community of bike riders.
Yeah. And then to add to that, when you go through these communities, it's one of the benefits of being on the podcast. We learn a lot about these communities. And like this year, the American Gothic painting, the backdrop of that, we went to that community, we went to that town, we got to stand in front of it with our pretend pitchfork and, you know, duplicate the American Gothic painting. But in years past, we've seen the world's largest popcorn ball. I mean, there's so many things that take place in Iowa that you're like, what? I can't recall anything else off the top of my head. Can you, AP?
Yeah, one of my favorites was Maxburg, Iowa. They have a competition every year called the skillet throw, where they literally throw like a frying pan. They had it during Rag Riot, you know, a preview of it, and people were really giving it their all. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And they had children like 5 years old that clearly have been through frying pan throwing training. Like they were knocking off the thing that they had to knock down. It was pretty cool. So there's just so many things about Iowa. I'm sure that you can say that about any state, but we're a tiny bit biased because we're both Iowans through and through.
But it encourages people to go to the small nooks and crannies of a state. And that's where you find, you know, the character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some of these towns we visited had populations of, I don't know, less than 100 people. And here we bring 20,000 people. I mean, that's a life-changing event for some of these people, you know, the money that it brings to their town.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I think that's really important as we look at, especially agriculturally based states and communities, these towns are getting smaller and smaller because you need less people to manage or run a farm. And being able to bring an event like Rag Bri through these smaller communities, the economic boom is just absolutely fantastic. And these towns and these people, they want us to be in there, and they're so open and welcoming, and they'll chit chat with you. If you don't watch out, you can be sitting in the town having a snack, and 2 hours later, you realize that you probably should get on your bike and go to the next town.
Yeah. I think the town that we probably not arguably had the biggest impact on was Greenfield this year. Earlier this year, Greenfield was struck by a devastating tornado, and I think 4 or 5 people passed away from the tornado. 200 homes were just completely flattened. They weren't even sure at first if they were going to host Rag Bri, but they took some time to organize and they were willing to do it. Over the course of the day on Rag Bri, they raised over $60,000, mm-hmm, just that day alone.
Mm-hmm.
And they're excited to have us back. At least that's what they've told us. So it was really cool to go there and see. I mean, it was really sad to see the devastation, but really cool to make a difference.
Right.
And I also appreciated that we did ride by the devastation because, mm-hmm, we've got riders who aren't in the Midwest and they've never seen or experienced a tornado. And so they actually were able to see that. And I know with Tiff and Allie on my team, they'd never seen the effects of a tornado. And they were we spent the rest of the day talking about tornadoes and did it really do that? And how could this house be demolished? And 20 feet away, the other house is just fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And you're kind of going, that's a tornado.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really interesting. We do a ride in June where we bike Rag Bri exactly how the riders will do it. It's a route inspection ride. And as we approached Greenfield on the route inspection, there was semi dump truck after semi truck. And we thought, oh, well, what's going on? Are they selling corn or something? And we came to learn that it was debris from Greenfield.
Mm-hmm.
Just regularly every 10 minutes, the entire route up until that town. So it was just really, even for someone who's been through tornadoes myself, it was really impactful.
Mm-hmm.
And how the community came together to get ready for Rag Bri. It wasn't like they had 6 months to prep for Rag Bri.
Yeah,
I mean, it just goes to show you how important Rag Bri is to these small towns and communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for some of our listeners who are getting inspired, because we've got a big biking community out here in Southeast Idaho, certainly. And, you know, we're used to mountains. We're used to arid, you know, Southeast Idaho climate. Give us a bit of a preview of what it's like to bike across Iowa, what to expect, what to plan for?
Well, first off, there really is a thing called corn sweat. And we pedal through an awful lot of cornfields, like right through the middle of them. So it is humid in Iowa. And I don't know if we actually said this, but Rag Ride takes place the last full week of July each year. So along with that humidity, it's typically, it's one of the warmest weeks of the year. So I don't even know how to train if I lived in Idaho and I was training for humidity, but that's a big factor, especially when you're sleeping in a tent at night and it's still, Peter, you can probably speak to this, it's still like 85 degrees in your tent and you're sweating. But the other factor is, most of the hills we have are rolling hills, which means different than mountains, you get a break. You know, you may pedal yourself up a hill, whether it takes 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes, but then you always get a reward of a downhill.
Yeah. And I know you guys are into geology and like science, so I want to take a minute to shout out the very start of our ride. Almost every year, we always start in the Missouri River Valley, and then we climb up, and there's always a series of large hills called the Luss Hills. And it's a geological formation formed by the icebergs that pass through Iowa. It's notorious among Ragby riders because it's some of the bigger hills that you'll encounter throughout the week.
Mm-hmm.
So. And they're fairly steep. So, yes,
yeah.
Growing up in Northwest Iowa, it's like the Luss Hills. And now my parents live on the Mississippi River in Northeast Iowa, and you've got the limestone cliffs. So,
oh, sure.
Yep.
There are parts that are flat in areas of Iowa, but it's hillier than someone who drives only across I-80 and doesn't really go into the state might think.
Yeah.
So when I got done with this ride, it was all south of I-80. I had my little all trails because I'm not cool enough to have Strava yet. It said 20,000 feet of elevation change. So it's a lot of, what did I see? A jersey is Iowa's flat like a waffle.
And
that's what it is. It's right. Up and down, up and down, up and down.
Yeah. But yet our starting elevation, you can't quote me on this, but I mean, we're under 1,000 feet. So that's a big difference from where you guys are. But yet you're going up and down, up and down. And statistically, the state of Iowa is about a half a mile lower on the east side than it is on the west side. But of course, you've got lots of waffle ridges to get there. So I think somebody had a shirt one year that said, technically, we're all downhill from here, which I guess is true technically, but not realistically.
Lies.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about Ragbri. Let's go into why everyone should own a bike or two or three. And I know I've got friends who have four or more. Why do we need a bike?
Murph, would you like to divulge how many bikes you have?
I was hoping that wouldn't come up. I have, no, I would not like to divulge how many bikes. But I, for some reason, you know, when you get into a new medium of biking, so like when I started riding more gravel bikes, it just seemed smart to have a gravel bicycle, which has a little bit different dimensions on it and also bigger tires. And then it started snowing in Iowa in the winter. And I thought I probably need a fat bike, which has really big tires so that I can get around in the snow. And then, of course, in the summer when I go on Ragbri, I need a road bike. And do you want me to keep going?
It goes on from there.
Yeah. And I'm doing a adventure trip in a couple weeks where I'm biking across the state of Ohio. So starting in Cincinnati and ending in Cleveland. And that's an old rail trail. So for that, we take everything we need and put it on our bikes, which is called being self-contained. And so I have a special bike for that, too, so that it's steel frame and it can accommodate lots of bags and weight. And it has integrated lights in it. So, so, I have a few bikes. But Andrew, you have more than one as well, right?
I'll say how many bikes I have. I have four bikes. And some of it is, yes, a utility, like Murph says, where you need a different type of bike for each style of riding. But my answer is that it's just fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun to have different bikes. It's cool to, they all ride a little different. They all fit a little different. The color schemes are all a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it just gets addictive over time. you know.
It absolutely does. I've been mountain biking. This is the end of my third season. And I built a gravel bike for Ragbri because I figured, well, what better way to learn how to maintain your own bike than build it? And serious, before Ragbri, I rode it 35 miles and I was able to go all the way across to Iowa without any issues. I just had to get the derailleur tuned a little bit. And I'm kind of like, okay, cool. And it was also the first time I ever rode with clipless pedals. So fell over twice.
Nice.
So I have three bikes. I've got the gravel bike. I splurged and got a full suspension mountain bike this year. Then I have a hardtail. You're right. It is addictive. It is absolutely fun. And there are a ton of research out there for the health benefits. And the big one that I like to always say is those who ride bikes add 13% to their life expectancy rate. So, you know, and it's great for the environment as well. You know.
And there's something to be said in any place that you ride a bike to see your environment at 10 miles an hour or 13 miles an hour is so different than in a car. Like there's just so much to see that you miss when you're in a vehicle.
Yeah. And it's whether it's Ragbri or riding to work, or just going on a century ride. And that I did a century ride for the first time as well there. The reward at the end of the day is so fantastic. Even on when we hit our single tracks on the mountain bike, being able to say, yeah, we just went across that. It took 2 hours, but it was a black diamond single track. There is that reward that you get at the end. You're tired, but you're like, okay, I think I can go another 5 miles. I'm okay now.
Yeah. So. Part of the reward is the food for me. I mean, you know, yeah, it's healthy, but like on Ragbri, you'll eat 2, 3, 4 breakfasts. Then you move on to lunch. Have more dinners.
I didn't quite understand that. You know, Tiffin Alley told me that you're going to eat so much food because you're burning so many calories. And you're right. You know, at the end of the day, I would have supper 3 times.
Yeah.
And the great part about Ragbri, you can get to the first town at 7:30 a.m. and get a pork chop and a Bloody Mary if you so chose.
Love it.
Love it. Well, can you help us with our trivia question? We started off with, which is, what was the first year of Ragbri?
Go ahead.
Ragbri started in 1973. So this year, 2024, was Ragbri 52. And that includes the COVID year. So, yep. Wow.
Very cool.
No, and we really want to thank you, Murph and AP, for joining us today. And we will see you next year. And yeah. I am hoping for a all north route because that can kind of go through my stomping grounds. I can't wait until January.
And we'll put a good word in for you.
Okay, awesome. And I promise that I will train a little bit more before next July. And for those who want to learn more about Ragbri and actually sign up, go to ragbri.com.
The Nature of Idaho receives support from listener contributions to KISU-FM. Shows are produced at KISU Studios in Pocatello at Idaho State University with editing and production by Mackenzie Young. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at kisu.org or from Spotify and other select podcast services. Send your thoughts and suggestions to noid-kisu@isu.edu.